That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. They're like brothers without that whole brotherly love thing. This is Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You get to an offer that you think is fair and what you're looking for. You know, there wasn't a reason to wait. Will we be active on the deadline day? I still think there's a chance that we do make some other moves. Again, whether it's players that are under contract or not.
702 Brady and Walker. That is Leafs GM Dave Nonis. Hang on, what does he mean by that? Dave Nonis says, okay, we're talking about the Danny Winnick deal in a second. He says, I don't know if we're done. We'll see come trade deadline if we move out some more players, whether they're under contract or not. Who's not under contract?
Maybe he's not anymore. No, he still is. He still has lots of term left.
He must mean
deal
Tim
Leiwicki gave him 2 summers ago.
He must mean like next year.
It was important that when Tim Leiwicki fixed the Leafs, he made sure the management that he used to fix the Leafs was in place 2 summers ago.
Where's Leiwicki? He's in a boat somewhere.
Did you see the Toronto FC ad yesterday? A lot of people were talking about it. I know. Yeah, listen, we're not. It's not MLS hour here on Brady and Walker, but they put together an ad campaign where they kind of like they show different players like turning off the team. Like there was an ad of the Bloody Big Deal ad was like the posters were in tatters. They got Michael Bradley on the bike turning off TV with Jermaine Defoe on it. It's basically a real slap at Defoe,
right?
Going out the door, and I'm like, that's got big Tim's paw prints all over that one.
I don't mind it.
From a marketing ad. I suppose so, but again, when it's been 8 years and you've accomplished diddly poo as a sports franchise.
But you're still going to market your team. You have to market your team.
They haven't had to until the last 2 years because people have finally said enough's enough and they've gotten sick of it.
Right, so what do you want them to do?
Not take cheap shots at players who actually came here.
It's not a cheap shot if it's deserved.
What's deserved? Did he perform here? Yes, he actually did.
He's a quitter. Jermaine Defoe just got up and quit.
Played well when he was here. He did enough when he was here.
He did. He's a great player. He's too good for this league. And then he quit. He signed a 4-year deal and he played like 8 games.
So they don't have to pay him anymore. That's good news for them.
Beat it. 704. What do you make of the Daniel Winnick deal? It's been a long rumored. We all knew Winnick was going somewhere. You get a second-round pick, not this year, next year, in 2016, a fourth-round pick this year, and an expiring contract in Zach Sill. You don't need to Google Zach Sill. He doesn't matter. We'll tell you that right now.
He's not fighting for a top-nine spot next year at camp. It's not going to happen.
Do you approach it two ways? Like, number one, when you sign Daniel Winnick for $1.5 million in the offseason, he comes to training camp and you say, well, boy, what do they have here? To get a couple of picks for this guy's expiring deal is great. Was this the right value given what we've seen for Daniel Winnick
well,
this season?
Well, you've dug in on me a little bit on the concept of wouldn't it be nice to move forward with Daniel Winnick?
No, it wouldn't.
But tell me why it wouldn't. He's a very good player, gets a lot of points at even strength, good penalty killer, perfect for your third line.
He's over 30, and you don't need Daniel. If you are in a rebuild,
he doesn't turn 30 till next week. You're acting like he's 37.
If you're not in a rebuild, yes, by all means. But haven't we reached that point now, Greg, where they've admitted, we've accepted, the fans are, it's a rebuild.
But
you know what you need for a rebuild? Draft picks, prospects, not more 30-something Daniel Winnick.
Your draft pick, whoever you get in the Daniel Winnick deal.
No, don't give me that.
No, what, you don't even know what I'm going to say. Whoever you get in the Daniel Winnick deal.
If the draft pick, will he be as good as Daniel Winnick?
No, I'm not asking that. I think that's a fair question. If it was a third-round pick and you're drafting 82nd, it's fair to ask, are you getting a player that in 3 years, 4 years probably, maybe even 5, will start to net you some tangible results in the when Phil Kessel's 33, if Phil Kessel's even here. That draft pick might start to play for the Leafs.
But don't
and play
fall
well.
Into this trap, though. People fall into this trap, and there's all these fans that want the Leafs to rebuild, and then they get underwhelmed by draft picks. Listen, don't underrate draft picks. You know, almost every player in the NHL today, star, non-stars, I know there's some college free agents, some unsigned guys.
I know.
But almost everybody was a draft pick. That's how you build teams.
That's how you build teams. Maybe I'm of the mind still, and I skipped your original question because I wanted to say that about Winnick, and I got more to say on Winnick. But the value's fine. If you are dealing him, you're not getting a first, and I think getting a late third from a contender, a cup contender, would be too little. It'd be too little to get for him. This may have been the plan all along to sign these three men, Winnick, Santarelli, Booth.
And two out of three really worked out.
And in essence, also, let's not forget, they probably had a concept, some crazy concept that Orr and McLaren, who have big league deals, won't play roles on this team. Fratton, who they got back, won't play a big role on this team. Carter Ashton won't play a big role on this team. So a lot of the guys that they, Troy Bodie won't play a role on this team. A lot of the guys that were hanging around and getting minutes and cups of coffee the last couple of years, they wanted to move on from them, even though they reacquired Matt Fratton for Jerry DiMigo. Jerry DiMigo wasn't going to play for this team.
Here's the underrated part of a proper rebuild that, again, fans here haven't really gone through. But you sign the guys like Winnick and Santarelli while you draft and develop your own prospects and be patient with them and hope that they turn into good players. Then you trade the guys like Winnick and Santarelli like they just did and bring in more draft picks and prospects. And you know what you do next year? You sign more guys on one-year deals for good value, like the MacArthurs and the Daniel Winnicks and Santarellis, and then you trade them again. That's what you do.
But you do it. You can only do it for so many years.
You do it for a couple years.
You do it for a couple
years.
Yes,
of course.
I don't think, and I said this to you 2 weeks ago, I don't think the rebuild needs to be flatten the earth out and destroy everything that moves and trade everything.
I don't want to see an expansion team here. I don't want to see Kessel traded out for a bunch of 18-year-olds.
So, and wouldn't we all agree that if you're flirting with this 28th, 29th, 27th place business, that there's an opportunity at Connor McDavid, that would stop a quote-unquote rebuild to some extent in its tracks?
If McDavid was here?
Yes.
Yeah. If McDavid's here, you're probably not trading Phil Kessel.
Right, and I don't even think you should trade Dion Phaneuf. And we all know you cannot trade David Clarkson. There'd be a lot of things I wouldn't do, per se. You know what? You know how I want this team to start trending? I want this team to look like the team that, I don't know, it could have been 2 summers ago, where you make the astute signings, where you keep assets, where you don't let guys who are valuable walk for nothing. At the very least, they've turned that on its heels and started getting things for things before they walk out the door. In a previous era, what I say to you 2 weeks ago, Cody Franzen, that's great they got him. That's great that they got something for him, and Santarelli. What's the crappy thing is that should never have come to that anyway, and Cody Franzen should be here in the next 3 years.
It is 10 after 7, a couple more deals as well to get to yesterday. We'll talk about it in your Thursday morning six-pack.
This is your Thursday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
So let's start right there. The Carolina Hurricanes were the other busy team yesterday. Yuri Tlusti goes to the Winnipeg Jets for a couple of draft picks, a third and a fifth. And Andre Sequeira, one of the top guys out there, a guy that was going for a first-round pick probably, does indeed go for that. It's to the LA Kings for a first-round pick and a prospect, Roland McEwen, who was drafted the second round last year.
It probably does say something about the status of one Slava Voynov, and regardless of how adamant you are about the case and how you viewed it, let's face it, this has been an NHL reaction to the NFL's reaction to all their domestic abuse problems, because Voynov's been treated a lot differently than Semyon Varlamov was last year. I'm more inclined to treat the guy like Voynov. Regardless of that, it's a need that LA had if Voynov's not coming back. It's a guy that can play second power play time, carry the puck well, and mix in Doughty, Mitchell, Reguerre, Green, Martinez, Muzzin, and now Sequeira. It's pretty good blue line.
Maybe people don't want to hear this, but the Toronto Maple Leafs should be going after Slava Voynov. I think.
There's a whole bunch of immigration issues. I'm not even joking. Yes, there's probably a lot of immigration issues.
There are those issues. But if you could be, if you were confident that he'd be in uniform next year, I'd go after that.
He's probably going to play again in the National Hockey League unless he's incarcerated for a long period of time. Let's put it that way.
Number 5, Kevin Garnett back in Minnesota to a wild ovation last night And while he was just okay, played 19 minutes, the Timberwolves came through on his big night. 19 for Andrew Wiggins. They blast the Washington Wizards by 20 points, 97-77. The Wizards, this kind of came out of nowhere. They are in free fall mode.
Yeah, they've lost 8 of 10, 5 straight. They're 4.5 games now behind the Toronto Raptors. And I don't know that the Raptors could lose enough games in a row or string a bad enough stretch together to get to where the Wizards are right now. Milwaukee could be the 5 seed the way they're playing. Imagine that. Imagine being the 4, getting Milwaukee, and then getting Atlanta. Sign me up. Sure, I'll do that. I'll take those two teams in the first two rounds.
Number 4. Remind you how good he is. He had 4 goals, 2 assists, and an 8-4 win over the Guelph Storm. He's now up to 98 points in 37 games. Number 3, Patrick Kane. The verdict is in. He is out 12 weeks with a broken clavicle. The playoffs begin, Greg, in 7 weeks. Does this affect what Chicago does before Monday? We all know the cap crunch they're in beginning next year, but now Kane's on LTIR.
Well, if you and I were sitting around and we were Blackhawks, you know, we were sitting around and we were advising Stan Bowman. We were in Stan Bowman's front office. I'd be more inclined to say this ain't the year to load up the gunpowder again. That we're just going to have to grin and bear it. That we're going to have to take our medicine and. I'll tell you what, if St. Louis can't beat Chicago with home advantage and no Patrick Kane, it may never happen.
You're
not talking rebuild there yet, but you've given the city of Chicago, like we're talking, 10 playoff round wins, 2 cups in 5 seasons, 10 playoff round wins and 5 and 2 cups.
And you still have Kane and Taves locked up for years and years in their mid-20s. For years to come, you're going to be fine.
You and I mentioned this 2 days ago. At some point in time, they'll have to do what they had to do at the end of 2010 with Bufflin and Versteeg and Ladd. Someone's going to go that they don't want to necessarily see go, but it doesn't necessarily have to be this year. They click into these new deals. There might be one pretty valuable player that's gone out the window, but these quick little deals like Michael Hanzus's and Brad Richards, you're not going to be able to keep those players.
Number 2, Buster Olney, ESPN Baseball Insider had a good piece up, and the story on yesterday around Jays camp, a lot of it was Russell Martin catching R.A. Dickey's knuckleball, and so far so good. Is this the end for Josh Tolley? And basically what Olney had said is he believes the Blue Jays have more than enough talent to win the American League East. This is from an outside perspective. Can it come together like it did not 2 years ago after all these new guys came in from Miami?
The only big question, right, is Boston. You might like Boston's lineup a little bit better than the Jays. You might like the Jays starting pitching a little bit more than you'd like Boston's right now, at least in terms of depth and experience and the promise. We had Marcus Stroman on yesterday.
Wait, I don't know if I like Boston's lineup better.
I like Boston's lineup better. Yeah, I do.
The Jays, top of the order, man, that top 6.
Very good. Sure, it's very good. Yeah,
there's Boston's. You're saying Boston's is better than that?
Gaping holes. You find me the gaping holes that are there or the gaping questions. I don't know if Dalton Pompey's a hole yet, but find me gaping holes like the Red Sox have, similar to the Jays in center field.
Oh, I'm not
similar to the Jays at second base.
Yeah, but you're right.
Similar to what
you're talking
maybe
8-9 though. You're talking 8-9. What about your top 6? There's no better in baseball.
It's very close. You don't know how we don't know how Sandoval is going to hit. Hanley Ramirez is going to hit in the American League.
Sandoval's busy eating all you can eat sushi right now.
I'm sure every Jay has abs of steel coming to camp.
I have the number one thing you need to know. The Leafs move Daniel Winnick to the Pittsburgh Penguins yesterday. A second-round pick in 2016, fourth-round pick this year in minor leaguer, Zach Sill coming on board. And they return to action tonight. They get the Philadelphia Flyers to the ACC. Now, we want to send you to the ACC. March the 11th, Toronto takes on the Buffalo Sabres. Name us this mystery player. Here is your second clue this morning. He was the most successful eighth-round pick in Leafs history. Yes, back when there were 8 rounds of the NHL entry draft. Now there's just 7. Your next clue and chance to win coming up at 8:14 this morning.
Nick Kiprios, our guest, our NHL insider for Sisley Honda, joins us at 7:22. Don't forget, Thursday night hockey tonight as well with Jeff Merrick. We'll tell you all about those matchups. It's a busy, busy night in the NHL. And yeah, the Leafs are back on the ice. We'll ask Nick about how he thinks Dion Phaneuf's reaction to being gone so long will be, how his reflexes will be, how his reaction will be, and how the fans will treat him.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
.724 Brady and Walker. Good morning, Andrew Walker, Greg Brady, Nick Kiprio is going to join us momentarily. Two big questions that we've been kicking around. At number one is Patrick Kane is going to be out 12 weeks. Does this, and playoffs begin in 7 weeks, by the way, does this change things? The outlook for the still cap crunched Chicago Blackhawks and awaiting word on Mark Giordano today. It's a different story in Calgary. This is a playoff bubble team. A team that probably considered themselves as a seller. If you go back to the preseason, what does that change for them?
And in a weird way, isn't it? It's kind of a bonus for both fan bases. And I know there hasn't been a lot of winning, any winning in Calgary for the last 8-9 years. A few playoff bursts, that's it. It was a bonus to have you this close in competition right now.
Oh, yeah, they're great story. Yeah.
Okay. That said, I also understand the concept of veteran players looking around going, if Giordano's, this is if Giordano's healthy, saying just a you know, little something for the effort here. Well, you know, a little trade a mid-round pick. Give us a body. Give us something we can use here. Winnipeg's got that. Winnipeg got a, like, this Kane tracksuit thing may have been the best thing that could have happened to the Winnipeg Jets. My God, who would argue that now?
Nick Kiprios joins us for Sisley Honda. What is the challenge, Nick, now for Brad Tree Living, and does it change if Mark Giordano's out for an extended period?
Well, listen, you're not going to replace him at the trade deadline if he's out for any significant amount of time here. This guy has jumped from being a pretty good defenseman to an elite defenseman in the league. And another prime example last night that this team does some incredible things when their backs are against the wall in a third period. And man, that was a gutsy comeback last night against New Jersey, and it's led by this guy. I don't know if he can truly get in and be a serious contender for an MVP, but he certainly should be in conversations. He's been that good.
Trade deadlines changed a lot, over the last several years, and a lot since you played. You came to Toronto. It was it on deadline day, or was it just a day or two before the Bill Berg trade? When was that?
That was probably a month maybe before the deadline.
Month. Yeah.
Probably, yeah, 3 weeks maybe. It was not a deadline move.
Do GMs of contenders sort of send, do they address this with players? Players are always going to want to know how many meetings. Like we heard, we heard Darren say on your show, like no Leafs have been told they're, you know, that a move is guaranteed. And I'm thinking, well, probably not. But agents would be conversing with Dave Nonis. Agents would be conversing with Brad Tree Living, Stan Bowman all the time about the likelihood of it and the teams they'd be a lot more willing for their clients to go to if they've got these no trade clauses.
Well, it's got to make sense for everybody. And the more power you have, like the limited or the no trade, the more leverage, you know, an agent has to facilitate a trade, but we're not seeing it where it once was, and that has strictly to do with the salary cap and how many teams are up against it. So money in, money out, it's a very difficult thing. That's why we'll probably see guys like, you know, Bozak or Furneaux moved at a draft opposed to, you know, a trade deadline.
We'll see how scorched earth this team goes. But what we saw is with Santarelli moved out and now Daniel Winnick moved out for a couple of picks. Do you like this strategy? Like in the sense of next offseason, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, are you looking for the next Daniel Winnick, a guy that you can get in for 1 year at $1 million and then send him packing 6 months later?
Yeah, you do, but you also... you're also looking for a little bit more stability. And while Winnick did a terrific job, there's no guarantees that you're going to be able to strike lightning like that, you know, in a bottle every year. And, you know, it's It'd be nice if you could, but it's hard, and you really got to roll the dice. Like, Winnick gave way more than I think the Leafs even thought that they could get out of him, and his stock rose. I mean, a second and a fourth is expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a guy that, I don't know how many teams he's been on. Six, right?
Six now, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of teams, right? Well, you know, there's also five other teams that, you know, didn't want to keep him. So, you know, in saying that, he had a great year, and he put himself in a position where not only would Pittsburgh trade for him, but if he can maintain this momentum, he's going to get a nice new contract. So no guarantees. You'd like a group of guys to kind of work their way towards being a contender. And it's tough if you've got a lot of guys on one-year deals that really don't know their future. So I don't know if that's a legitimate way to build a contending team, having a bunch of guys on one-year deals. It's just not realistic. And, of course, the issues were never with the Winnicks or the Santorellis, the Booths. It's your core guys not coming through on long-term deals. And that'll be the challenge for the Leafs, right?
Yeah.
Is now, you know, I you guys could have traded Winnick and
well, Brady wanted to re-sign him,
right? But you could have spent a month figuring out market value and then coming to the assessment that you could get a second, third, or a fourth, and maybe a multiple picks for Winnick.
Yeah.
The hard part now is, you know, while you're pushing hard to trade Bozak, how do you do that with so many years left on his deal? Right? Phaneuf, the same thing. Like, the Leafs could have traded Phaneuf yesterday to the Los Angeles Kings and taken a mid pick and a first rounder and Mike Richards, and then it would have been done. But the Leafs didn't want to do that. They wanted a guy like Toffoli, and that's not happening.
That's not happening.
That never was going to happen. So they went in a different direction, and they ended up with Sekera.
Sportsnet, by the way, has Thursday Night Hockey, Chicago, Florida, in Florida, in Sunrise, 7:30. Also in Sportsnet 360, Red Wings finishing up their California trip there in San Jose. Big points for the Sharks on the line tonight. Let me ask you about Dion. He's back in the lineup after a dozen games out. There's nobody in the city, in the front office, in wearing a jersey, throwing a jersey, in our positions. There's nobody that's changing their mind about what they think of Dion Phaneuf based on how he plays the next 20 games in a toilet bowl of a season, you know, with the Leafs swirling the bottom five. Is there any internal debate going, let's reevaluate this and see how he is over the last 20 games playing 24 minutes a night? Is there?
No, I don't think so. I think they know what direction that they want to go, but, you know, from what I just said about Los Angeles, they're not going to let him walk out the door just for the sake of getting rid of him. So, you know, there's value there. It's just not where they thought it would be for 7 years, $49 million. You know, they were hoping they could get a guy that could lead and command more of the room. It didn't happen. They want to move in a different direction. And, you know, he was never really put in a position to succeed, unfortunately. The pressure of trying to carry a team that hasn't won a cup in nearly 50 years, and it was never a strong room, and unfortunately for Phaneuf, it never truly worked out. So
front office-wise, this is a fascinating thing, because we're talking about something that Dave Nonis was adamant about, this group and these players. Do you feel like he's gone to Shanahan and said, you know what, we don't always get things right in this business, and I screwed up, but I want the chance to fix it? Or is Brendan Shanahan saying, you are going, is it that? There's not even any
not
debate.
Even
Nonis is throwing himself on the sword and saying, I made a mistake, but I want to clean it up.
Well, listen, I mean, fault or not, this thing's being driven by Brendan Shanahan, and I'll be very surprised if Dave Nonis is around after all of this to try to put the Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Right.
So he's there for now, but you know, if you're Brendan Shanahan, you got to go to the board. You got to kind of take a little bit of accountability with you. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be, you know, Dave Nonis.
We have about 30 seconds here, Nick. Patrick Kane out 12 weeks, which is probably longer than some people thought. Playoffs begin in 7. So if you are Stan Bowman, is this just, is this, hey, like the sum of the parts need to come together and we all have to be a little bit better? Or are you so used to winning in Chicago, does he try to get a little creative? Does he try to replace that offense somehow?
Well, they're targeting Vermette now. So that's the only way that they can go. We know they were in with Sakara, and in a perfect world, they'd like to add some depth on that blue line, but they need to replace a guy that's gone, and they don't really expect him back. 3 months, you know, can it be 2.5? Can they get him back in the first or second round opposed to a Stanley Cup final? Maybe, but you're not going to hang your hat on that. You've got to go get a guy like Vermette and give up a first and a prospect or two, because the price is going to be very high. And we know Maloney has made that abundantly clear. Their cap issues say that they can only use an unrestricted free agent. They cannot add anybody with term here, because July 1st, you can't go anywhere close to over 10%. And with those contracts of Taves and Kane, it's just impossible to add a guy with a contract. Yeah. They still got to unload, and they will in the off season. But in the meantime, Vermette, I think, would be a good fit for them to try to come and replace a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit of Pat Kane. That's a devastating injury.
It's exactly why Joffrey Lupul's never been an option for the Hawks. You know,
or many teams, to be quite, you know.
Was
it's a lot of dough, it's a lot of years. Yeah, when everyone's at the cap. Thanks for this, Nick. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a great day, guys.
There's Nick Kypreos, part of our big trade deadline coverage. Starts at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet. Loads of bodies. I just hope this rumor that all 30 GMs conspired to get all trades done by Saturday isn't true. Like, that's a nasty trick to play on television networks and radio people.
It is.
But they tried. Yesterday, it was like a volcano bursting out. This guy, next guy.
I woke up from my nap and everybody was traded. Yeah. A grapevine is coming up with Don Cherry, Brian Williams. They talk about how Bobby Orr was not the same player after being traded to Chicago. Yes.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's mostly the jealous people. They get kind of mad about something they had. Anyway, you don't.
What
mind.
Is. Who sings this?
Timex Social Club. It's about 1987.
Will you stop picking the music?
I get them confused with Club Nouveau. No. It's not a looks thing, it's a sound thing. Everyone leave me alone. Stop the emails.
All right. When you take over your own show at 1, you need to take all the music with you. It has to be all yours. You can keep the Timex Social Club.
I'm really going to miss you.
Like, how many songs do they even have? How do you know this?
One! I can't name a second song. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. By the way, they reran Blake Shelton's SNL, and he's very funny.
Yes.
He's very good at that stuff. Did you see the Hee-Haw sketch?
No, I did not.
You got to see it. It's very, very good.
Have you watched? So you watched the Blake Shelton SNL. Have you watched the 40-year?
You're
It's so embarrassing.
It's been on my
PVR. It's like 10 days later.
It's been on my PVR for 11 days. Okay, by the way, really quick.
They're going to have the 41st anniversary by the time you watch.
Listen, I had to take some people to task yesterday for speculating about Josh Hamilton, and I didn't like people going, what'd he do? Did he go Aaron Hernandez and somebody? I'm like, this. Can we just leave? Can we wait and find out? Do we have to know? Why do we have to know?
Yeah. Why
do we have to know everything first?
And why does why is it immediate? I guess it's social media. Why is everyone with the jokes right away?
Why
jokes?
I've never told an Aaron Hernandez joke. I've never found one funny. Those are unfunny people. But I will say this: so Rob Ford is selling some stuff on eBay and giving 10% of the proceeds to charity. That's really big. Why not 11? So yesterday he tweeted there's some new items up, but they include the, do you remember November 5th, 2013, he confessed to having smoked crack cocaine. He wore an NFL logo tie. Do you remember this?
I remember the first part of that. I don't remember the tie, but anyway.
The tie has, like, and it's like old school. It's like old orange creamsicle Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Old Denver Broncos logo with a horse and a D. It's just very, it was a very bizarre choice of tie. He likes football, likes the NFL, but he's selling that. You could buy that tie now. It's the original tie if you look for it on eBay.
So what, $50?
It's going to go for a lot more than that. We should look at where it's at right now. But he is selling the tie.
Not like Eric Smith, our next guest, who wears my favorite Eric Smith tie.
His NBA logo pajamas.
No, it's like a skinny tie, but it's
report a suspected impaired driver by calling 911.
That sounded like him.
It's a skinny tie, but it's like a different material. Very fast.
Is there a material? Eric Smith,
yeah.
But we'll. I don't know. I don't mind putting in a bid if it's not ridiculous. We've done that before. It's like buying gifts for famous people on wedding registries and whatnot. We'll talk about the Rondo suspension, too. They're expecting him to come back and play on Friday night. But if you missed it, Atlanta pounded Dallas with Rajon Rondo suspended for conduct detrimental to the team after Rick Carlisle ran onto the floor and yelled at him.
Yeah.
Imagine if Dwayne Casey did that to Kyle Lowry, we'd have 2 weeks of material.
What,
2 weeks.
What was your vantage point of that, Eric?
In Dallas, we call the game from pretty much the roof. I didn't really see the incident up close and personal, but like I would in some of the other perches that we have courtside in the arena. But during
the play, when a bald man in a suit ran him to mid court, you then
the man I believe to be Rondo and the man I believe to be Carlisle. I still don't know exactly what the altercation was necessarily over, other than the same stuff that we've all read. But the fact that. And Jones and I kind of noted it on the air when it happened. It'd be interesting to see if he gets back into the game. And, of course, he didn't. And the numbers that came out after the fact that the Mavs were plus 16 after that point. I mean, Rondo wasn't doing a whole lot in that game anyways. So whether he even kind of got into that little argument with his coach or not, I wonder how much he would have seen the floor to begin with, because Devin Harris was the one that was really carving up the Raptors. He and Monte Ellis in the backcourt really seemed to be having the most success against the Raptors in that game.
Well, and Barea came out and hit 3 3-pointers in pretty quick succession, right?
Yeah, that fourth quarter got away from Toronto just as it did in the game against New Orleans. And it was kind of a bit of a rarity as well. And that's kind of why I was joking with some folks about the Chicken Little mentality of how, you know, suddenly gone and forgotten is the 4-game winning streak. And suddenly now, oh my gosh, everything's bad in Raptorland in this 3-game losing streak. And those were only 2 of 8 games this year. Raptors, I think, are 34-35-8 now, guys, when taking a lead to the fourth quarter. The problem is 2 of those 8 games, 25% of those games have come in back-to-back games in this 3-game losing streak. So it's not like this has been a trend for Toronto over the course of the year, throwing away leads in the fourth. They've been pretty damn good about locking down leads and wins when going to the fourth with the lead, but it's just they've let it slide now in 2 straight games, and I guess that's a bit of a concern. Kind of just how they're losing as well. You know, the ball movement seems to be stopping. It's a lot of long jumpers, a lot of contested shots, and just the decision making I think hasn't been fantastic.
It's something we debated a little bit today, because I think we always fall into this trap, right? The Raptors win most of the time, so yeah, when they lose a couple, you're going to start to analyze and see the holes.
Mm-hmm.
But you forget when you compare them to the rest of the Eastern Conference. Like, if you're watching any out-of-market NBA, and I did a little bit last night, you watch some of that Timberwolves game, and you say, oh, my goodness, the Wizards are in trouble. And Chicago loses Derrick Rose, and they get the bejesus pounded out of them by Charlotte. And again, it reminds you that these things happen, and the sky isn't necessarily falling in Raptor land.
I think that, I think it's... We probably said this before, maybe 2 weeks ago, a month ago, and 6 weeks ago. I think they are still what they are, what they've been all year. They are a good but not great team. I think they got off to that hot start, which maybe, I'm not going to say fooled us, but sort of tricked some of us into thinking that they were perhaps better than we thought they are. I think they're a very good team, but they're not yet an elite team. In the Eastern Conference, though, they are a very good team that I think has as good of a chance as anybody else of making some noise come postseason time, and I think it will all depend on what matchup they get. And not to throw out the final 25-odd games of the season, but I think it really, these games now are more about preparation for the postseason and making sure that you're ready to play proper basketball and play at the top of the game come the playoffs. Because I honestly believe that the record itself, whether Toronto goes out and loses a whole ton of games down the stretch here but still holds on to first in the division, I don't think it really matters. I think it's all about what this team does in the playoffs, because I think ultimately you're going to be judged at the end of this year not by whether you match 48 wins or you actually get to 50 or if you slide down somehow possibly and only win 45 games. What happens in the playoffs? Because I think if you don't win a round in the playoffs this year, I think that is regression. I think you've got to at least win a round and keep pushing this thing forward.
Eric Smith, our guest. Golden State's here tomorrow. The Raptors go play the Knicks at Madison Square Garden on Saturday. Yet to still win without Carmelo Anthony. They're 0-17 now. They're why mess with perfection? They've got a great chance to Carmelo. You know?
Oh my goodness! And to think that Carmelo is going to be the one to be the glue to hold it all together. He's going to come back healthy next year, and what? Who are you going to have around him? Who is it that you've built around Carmelo Anthony to make this team better? This is a team that I thought even on paper going into the season was nowhere near as bad as what they ultimately turned out to be. And then you trade away Shumpert and you trade away Smith and you lose Melo and there's going to be off-season, overhauls and changes because there needs to be. But it's going to take a while, I think, to turn this thing around. And on top of that, of course, we all know here in Toronto that the Raptors holding the Knicks draft pick in a couple of years and just overall just the mess that have become the Knicks because of all the deals that they've tried to make over the years, sending away picks, spending tons of money. It's going to take a while to turn that thing around.
And Bargnani's going to be playing for that Armani team in Italy or something like that. So he won't be playing with him.
I don't know if that's the ultimate loss. I think they'll be okay.
So let me ask you about DeMar, though. You're right about a lot of that stuff. You can't manipulate the seeding. There's nothing they can do. With a game or two left, teams can do that kind of stuff. There has been, how much of DeMar's game do you attribute to the injury coming back from it? I don't think he's been as good game in, game out as he's been last year. We got a lot fewer games to judge him by, but is that just something that can happen? Your play and your performance, your numbers can take a bit of a dip, and they have.
Yeah, and I think the other thing as well is there are more options this year, I think, for Toronto offensively, so I think that maybe DeMar's not getting the ball as much, and when he does, I found it kind of interesting the other night, not to get away from your question, yeah. Greg, but this plays right into DeRozan. Kyle Lowry stood up at the end of the game, I believe the New Orleans game, and was asked about, the Raptors giving away the lead and kind of not moving the ball enough. And he said, hey, listen, we're a jump shooting team. We're a three-point shooting team. Going into that game, and I haven't, looked at the numbers. I kind of just got away from it for a day. But the Raptors were eighth in the league in three-point attempts, eighth in the league in three-point makes. They are a jump shooting team. And as much as it might, kind of fly in the face of what Dwayne Casey wants to do sometimes. Even Casey's acknowledged, hey, we are what we are. We are a jump shooting team. And I think that doesn't necessarily play into what many of us watching or many fans watching might want to say, well, get the ball inside, take the ball to the rim, get to the free throw line. Why is DeRozan taking an elbow jumper contested all the time? Why are the Raptors launching threes?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you go back to the beginning of the season, that's what they were doing as well. That's how they won ball games. They are what they are. And I think right now, I don't want to say it sounds as cliche and as simple as shots aren't falling, but I think the ball movement isn't what it was at times last year with Lou Williams, with Kyle Lowry, with DeMar DeRozan, with even Patrick Patterson and Gravis Vasquez. They're a jump shooting team, and without a true legit post presence, they almost have to be.
And you're playing teams that defend the jumper better. Houston does that very well.
Golden's playing to your strength. Unfortunately, your strength has not been very good for the last couple of games, at least in the fourth quarter, and certainly wasn't there from the tip in the game against you.
And guess what? The fellas coming in tomorrow night, you better take a lot of jumpers if you want to outscore Golden State. That's the only way. They're a Ferrari. That's the only way you're keeping pace with them is to make a lot of jump shots.
That's a very good analogy. They are a Ferrari, and they are absolutely, absolutely a beast to deal with. And, Steph Curry is to me, there's no doubt about the fact that he's winning the MVP trophy right now. He's heads and tails above even James Harden at this point.
Eric, thanks for this. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
It's Eric Smith, Golden State tomorrow. The Raptors will go to New York and play the Carmelo-less Knicks just before that. And then, again, you can get kind of fat on these teams, the Knicks, the Sixers. Next Wednesday, though, Cleveland's here, and that's fun. These are all measuring stick type games.
And look at you, fancy. You have tickets to Friday night
GSW
against Golden State.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this all year.
I would like to go with you, but I'm ranked down the list.
I heard you had a date already. We may never speak again after tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true.